There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today on Midday Mobile. Hour number two underway. A couple of headlines for you. I think most of the country right now still watching what's going on with the presidential contest. Still not formally decided. A handful of states that haven't been called. Some media outlets calling Arizona, some aren't. But Nevada... Nevada, Georgia, still up on the board. Pennsylvania, we're waiting to see what's going to happen there, and if Donald Trump still has a pathway to 270 votes. Keep hearing. We're going to get an update any minute now. It seems like we've been hearing that all day yesterday. That we ought to be done with this tomorrow or tonight or whatever. And here we are. It's 1:09 p.m. Central Standard Time, Thursday, November the 5th, and still no formally declared a winner. Also, earlier in the program, if you listen to the last program, a great show I recommend everybody listen to, the Jeff Poore Show, we listened to a little bit of Kay Ivey's press conference. Mask ordinance has been extended, guys, till December the 11th, so maybe you can get something kind of festive to add to your mask collection. Maybe you could do some Christmas format or something. I don't know. But anyway, that being said, 251-343-0106. Need to go to the text line here. Let's see. Why repeal it when this is from, Roy in Spanish Fort. Why repeal it when it stays forever political football? Doctors don't search for solutions, or Democrats, Republicans don't search for solutions, just better stances around issues. Haywood said, always looked at healthcare as a choice. Do I want it? What do I want? Is it part of an employment package? I choose no to insurance except dental until my 30s. That was always a sticking point. Me and the ACA do not mandate that I must purchase it. Says he's the right thing to do. This dude, I have worked hard all my life for health care. No one should be telling me what I should feel good about. They're taking my money and giving it to someone who I have not, who has not earned it when it comes to health care. We got another Don here. Hi, quick question. Does Donald Trump have any executive powers that he could implement to change the outcome of this voter fraud in swing states? Answer your question, Don. I guess he could direct Attorney General Barr to look at possible crimes being committed, federal crimes being committed here. But we know what would happen. We'd hear something along the lines of... this is a dictatorship or third world authoritarianism or something. But I think he does have something he could do. And if finally Terry says, "Lock me up, I'm done with the mask." I think you reflect what a lot of people think, Terry. Let's work in a phone call here real quick before we get going. Larry in Mobile wants to talk about Trump. Larry, what's on your mind?
I think these states are scared to be the first. Be the one that puts him over.
Well, I guess it's the states, but the media outlets have to call it as well. And there's a lot of that going on, because I guess the the formal count isn't formal until there's some kind of canvassing, and there's processes based on its individual state.
Yeah, but I think they're scared that the state that puts them over is going to get some flack from it.
You're probably right, and then who knows, legal challenges and all the sorts. So thanks for the call, Larry. Congressman, no matter what happens, people are not going to trust their I think there is going to be a lack of trust from here going forward in the American election systems.
I think so. I think it was intended. I think Trump intended to insert that doubt and kind of preached it, and you hear it repeated. Whether it has any factual basis or not, you hear it repeated. And I think the average citizen doesn't know how to find out what information is correct or not. And if you just basically say, I don't trust this guy because he's a Democrat, or I don't trust him because he's a Republican, then you never do get to the truth. You spend more time hating than you do thinking. And I think people enjoy hating because it keeps them from having to do the hard work of thinking through issues.
I mean, maybe for some, but how many times are we going to, Donald Trump gets elected, and then, like, the first story from the Washington Post is, like, the path to impeachment or whatever. So we have these elite institutions in this country that are always, blatantly anti-Trump. They are going by this idea that the ends justify the means, and people get beaten down by it over and over and over and over again. And then here we are, it's re-election time. You don't trust the media. You know where they're at. And it just seems like there's these government entities, these governors, these secretary of states, these attorney generals. They all, in a lot of these places, just are they run on being anti-Trump. You can see where the American public all of a sudden is like, you know what? I don't really trust these institutions. I don't think it's a thinking thing. I think it's just we've seen this play over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, I happen to agree with you that the institutions, whether you're watching NBC or MSNBC or you're watching Fox, you choose your news pacifier. You choose which one you're going to stick in your brain, and it takes a lot of work to review both the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, The Guardian, etc. Those of us who love this kind of stuff pay attention to it, and if you see it all and you flip channels until you get a pretty good idea of what's worked, you realize why the public is cynical about what they hear and what they see. And they're also cynical because their government, the people they send to represent them, are so incredibly incompetent. And they say, well, why hasn't the Congress passed the second stimulus? Well, nobody has any idea except Pelosi and Trump can't get along. Why can't they get along? Well, they have egos, and their egos are more important to them than the American people.
Let's get in a break here. That's goodbye, Congressman. We'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan. He's taking a little time off tomorrow, if you're tuning in. You'll have me once again, but We'll hear from April Marie Fogle, Alabama Today, who's going to sit in, and we'll beat around on the news and talk about the news. So hopefully you can tune in for that. You also hear me on the Jeff Poor Show. How convenient was that? Sean has a show called the Jeff Poor Show, and here I am, Jeff Poor. But tomorrow you want to tune in. We'll have Secretary of State John Merrill, Congressman Bradley Byrd, and State Senator Chris Elliott, as we do every Friday. We'll get caught up on everything there, but that's from 9 to noon. If you're not a usual listener, then give it a shot. We will proceed forward here. Sitting with us today, former Congressman Parker Griffith on the program. Congressman, this is kind of one of those situations where what I think is going to happen. This is, this could change, but it feels like Biden's going to be president-elect. Republicans aren't going to have enough seats to take the House, but they're going to make gains in the House. It's going to be razor-thin margin. Nancy Pelosi retains her speakership. And the Republicans keep the Senate. Well, either 2022, if you're up for a re-election and you're a Republican, that's not necessarily the worst place to be. You get to run against Biden, and you somehow have that firewall in place to keep all the crazy stuff like court packing and statehood for Puerto Rico and D.C. from happening. That Democrats, maybe they're ready to celebrate this one and get it in the bag, but 2022 is going to be tough for Democrats, I think.
I think so. It cycles that way. I think the thing about if Biden should be the president-elect, I think you'll find it very interesting what his relationship with the Senate will be with certain individual members. He was well-liked in the Senate by some very important senators who remain there. And I think there'll be a different attitude. It won't be as adversarial. And I think once you say that Trump is a gifted person, smart, able, has some good ideas, and got some good things done, then you have to contrast that with, had he had the personality of a Reagan, this would not even be a contest right now. His method of going about things was adversarial. He was a bully. When it came time for him to get what he needed from the Congress or from the Senate, he had no relationship whatsoever there. McConnell can barely stand him. Rubio can't stand him. Cruz can't stand him. Nobody really likes Trump. And that's a problem in politics. You really do things for people you like. And you can be forced into things, but it doesn't leave a great taste in someone's mouth. And so let's suppose Trump pulls this out. Well, the minute he's sworn in, he's a lame duck. Everybody in the Senate knows he's a lame duck. And
he's not going to run again. I think it's...
Well, that's my point. The fear of Trump goes away. And the closeness of this election sends that message to Republican senators that, hey, this guy, we don't want him campaigning with us. We didn't want him campaigning with us during this cycle. And so he's really going to be limited, not because he's not smart, but because he's so abrasive. And he has said and done things that people don't forget. And they're supposed to be on his team.
But what do you argue there? Let me play this other side. That Donald Trump, that whole personality, which has its negatives for sure. I'm not denying that. It's the reason why a lot of people voted Donald Trump. They like that brashness. They like that abrasiveness. That there's some good that comes along with it. And whether that's right or wrong, I mean, we could have that discussion. But I think that if you just look at it, winning elections and getting voters, there are people who are like, hell yeah, I like this guy.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think his style and how he came on, and people said, yeah, let's get rid of these so-and-sos, and they're not worth a darn, and he's telling it like it is, and go Donald. But he did not come with a new plan to replace Obamacare. Many of the things he said he was going to do are undone. And I think it's really an art to getting things done in Washington, D.C. I think that as the country grows, changes its demographics. I mean, we're watching that in, you know, Georgia and in other areas. People are stunned that the Latinos in Dade County, Miami, voted for Trump. Well, guess what? They're not Latinos. They're Cubans. Their heritage is Cuban, and they are not the same people who come from Honduras or Central America or South America. It's a different group.
Yeah, but they went for Obama in 08 and 12. I mean, it's not totally unheard of that a Democrat could pick up the Cuban vote in South Florida.
Yes, but I think they went for Obama because they went away from Bush. They went away from the war. They went away from losing 300,000 jobs a month. They vote, most people do, or not most, but many people vote against someone, not for someone.
But if Democrats saw a play there, they just never, it seemed to me they never really took advantage of that. That's probably what's all said and done. We're looking at the state of Florida. And I would argue this, with Biden's unable to make inroads and capitalize on Obama's gains there, neither was Hillary Clinton. But the growth of the panhandle, you know, they're adding a population like crazy. We know that's a place that's not going Democrat anytime soon.
That's really Alabama.
Yeah, the Florida is becoming more of a red state. While Georgia's going blue, Florida is solidifying itself more of as a red state, and you know, if you're a Democrat and you're looking at this, you need to go down there and do some work, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting that the Republican Party is beginning to look more and look more like the everyman and not the button-down collar executive on Wall Street. It's almost like we're changing. Gradually changing that the Democratic base are multiple silos of ethnic groups. The Republican base is becoming, it looks more like what the Democratic base used to look like. White, hardworking people, and whatever. But it's changed. It's interesting.
Well, Democrats keep banking on this demographic shift. It's going to carry them, but I don't think you can wait on that. If you're a Democrat, you got to start looking at other places to build your base.
Yeah, and I don't know that they can. They got to get rid of the Black Lives Matter business. They got to quit talking about the Selma Bridge, for God's sakes. And they've got to shift gears into what people want and need, i.e. education, health care, and right. Some personal accountability.
We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back to Midday Mobile. No Sean Sullivan today. He is taking some time off. Hopefully he is enjoying himself. We'll catch back up with Sean, I think, sometime in the near future. I'm not exactly sure what the timeline is. But you got me, Jeff Poor of the Jeff Poor Show, filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan today, tomorrow, maybe Monday. I'm not real sure, but it'll be something like that. But if you're listening in tomorrow, it'll be me, and we'll have April Marie Fogle from Alabama today sitting in. Looking forward to hearing from you. Your calls, 251-343-0106. Still in with us here is former Congressman Parker Griffith. Boy, the text line guys really love you, Congressman. You're really speaking their language.
I'll bet.
So just a little heads up in case you just tuned in. Parker is a former congressman for the 5th Congressional District. He was the guy that came before another frequent guest on these airways, Bo Brooks. A very interesting story about that congressional district was what Bud Kramer for years and years and years, and then you he steps aside and you get a seat. But you have the privilege of having seen it from both sides of the aisle, Republican and the Democratic side.
Yes, absolutely. It was very educational, and both sides of the aisle have got some great people. We're so polarized that some people are even afraid to speak to someone who's in the other party. Don't want to stand with them in the hall. It's paranoia is real. So it's an interesting place.
This is my contention about Washington D.C. It is fun to argue about issues and health care and Medicaid expansion and education and all the important stuff, but. Really, what's going on here is all these are just pitches to maintain that power, and in some ways all of these policy debates we have that you see, it's all professional wrestling. That they're real sausage making and getting the side ingredients go into that sausage. That's really where you derive your power from as a member of Congress. It's not these high-minded oratories about whether or not we should raise taxes on people or whatever.
No, you're right on. And people don't realize this. I think they probably do if they stopped and thought about it. There are probably maybe 5 Democrats in the House that really run that place. Pelosi, of course, being the lead dog, and probably 5 Republicans in the House that really matter. And the same is true in the Senate. It's first of all, it's not a meritocracy. It's not about how good you are, or how well you understand things. It's a seniority system. The longer you stay, the better you get, the more money you can raise, etc. And then into that system, you inject or infuse hundreds of well-dressed, good-looking, $800 shoes, $1,000 suits from K Street, the lobbyists. And they make that system work. They're kind of the oil. They are the go-to. When I was there raising money, I had a fundraiser that knew who to call, leave them a message, tell them what you want, and tell them to call me back. And, you can raise $25,000 or $30,000 at a breakfast, et cetera. It's money-driven, and it's a seniority system. So that should tell you a little bit about the quality of the individual that rises to power. They don't have to be bright. They don't have to be interested or have a specific purpose.
They're good at the wrong stuff. They're good at navigating the corridors, the halls of Congress. They're good at raising money. They're good at the politicking. And they're just awful at policy and understanding concerns of people and problems. That they're good at climbing a totem pole, whereas that's not necessarily why we elect them there. We don't elect people to Congress to go climb totem poles. We elect them to Congress with the hopes that they're going to be able to do good things and make the world a better place. But that's not the case at all.
No, it's not, it takes a real strong leader to make that place work. Now, it doesn't take such a strong leader in this particular climate because the sides are so obvious that you can't cross this line. If you do, we'll ostracize you. So it's easy to lead that kind of herd, but it doesn't get things done because if the House stays Democratic, they're perfectly capable of stalling are getting in the way of things that they don't like. McConnell's found that out. And it may be even tighter after this election's over. Biden will be better getting things done than Trump was, because Trump never got anything done except through executive order.
Well, he got some judges through, and he worked with McConnell on that, and he worked. I mean, I think this kind of silly little tax cut thing they did at the very beginning. But you're right, he wasn't incredibly successful with Congress. But you know, back to your earlier point about how these you have some of these unimpressive people. I mean, like Mitch McConnell, while impressive at fundraising for his loyal lieutenants and getting Republicans elected. I mean, that's the whole game. That's where Mitch McConnell is good, and you respect him for it. But it's not like he's this the well-spoken guy that has all these attributes to make him like this great politician. He's kind of boring and turtle-esque, and you know that's kind of Washington D.C. in a nutshell, right there.
It is, absolutely is. And we made the mistake beginning to treat our elected officials, particularly those chairs and vice chairs of committees, as royalty. Many a day I walked out of the Capitol and down the steps only to watch limousines with tinted glass, et cetera, picking up committee chairs, et cetera. I'm a stranger as an oncologist. I understand, I understand being, you know, being catered to, but Congress and the Senate is over the top. They're overpaid, underworked, and the bureaucracy up there is really, really deep. It's real deep. But nobody wants to change it, because once you get there, you
get all these perks, right?
Yeah, right. You know,
it's,
yeah.
It's like
you don't want to create a problem for yourself. So
this is the life. Speaking of people about to experience the life, our friend Coach Tommy Tuberville.
Oh my gosh!
I think he is. He's going to be well cut out for this. It's not that. Senator-elect Tuberville is going to be this high-minded orator that he's going to talk about philosophical points or whatever, but he's going to be a guy that is going to be he'll raise a ton of money. People will come and see him. He's a very good retail politician.
Yes.
He's going to be the anti-Mitch McConnell, all right? He's going to be the guy that you want out front and talking and explaining this or that. You got to coach him up a little, probably, but he's gonna fit into that system just right.
He's perfect for the system. He's perfect for it. He's there to learn. His ego's not wrapped up in what he knows about the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, or he's not burdened with a lot of facts, but he will fit there very well, and I think he'll be a great salesman, particularly for groups of people that he likes and gets along with. He'll do fine. I mean, it's the best private club in the world, the U.S. Senate. It's incredible.
He's going to be able to go and talk about deer hunting season and, is crappie biting down in Lake Martin or whatever. You know, like,
that's right.
People identify with that, though, because none of those guys are, you know, that identifiable with. Tommy Tuberville's a multimillionaire and can afford to do things the average person can do, but you can identify with him in ways that you can't identify with a lot of those guys up in Washington, D.C.
Well, you know, when I spoke with him and interviewed him, he's very nice, easy to be around. He's a good listener. He's got a good face, got a good smile. He'll do fine. He's got to be careful that there are senators there and congresspeople there that would love to have some of the things that we've gotten through our legislators, such as Shelby and others. And so, you know, we've got to be careful. We have to protect ourselves, and you do that by the committees that you're on and the kind of money you can raise. So,
well, we'll have to see how he... I'm interested to see how that relationship between Richard Shelby and Tommy Tuberville works itself out. Taking a break in here. One more to go. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Moore filled in for the legendary Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan, who's taking a little time off. Tune in tomorrow. You'll hear me filling in once again for Sean Sullivan with April Marie Fogel of Alabama Today. Usually Friday guest on my show, but we're going to absolve her of her duties, and we're gonna do a 2-hour show together tomorrow. So make sure you tune in for that. Still with us for just a few more minutes here, former Congressman Parker Griffith of Alabama's 5th Congressional District, Congressman Governor Ivey extending the mask ordinance, kind of done out of the news cycle so crazy. I don't know many people are paying attention to it, but you got to kind of wonder how much longer do you think Alabamians put up with Ivey's the emergency order? Because you look around the states that surround Alabama, they have put the mask up, or at least leaving it up to private businesses.
Well, it's ignored up here. I go down to a couple of watering holes here just about every afternoon and see what's going on, and you can't go in without a mask, so you put your mask on. And then as soon as you get in, you take it off, sit at the bar and order what you want, or sit at a table, order what you want. Out in rural North Alabama, at least rural Madison County, rural Marshall County, I don't know if anybody has a mask on. You know, the best laws are the laws that are easiest to do, not to. They need to make sense to the people you're trying to rule, and the mask is. I can see the mask in urban areas where you're closed in and you can spread that virus easily. I can see it in certain businesses, but one size fits all is a stumbling block for all governments, so we're running into that.
I just the KIV phenomenon is fascinating to me, that she is really, you know, and I know this isn't of her doing, no one's saying that it is, she's really made the executive, the governor's office in Alabama, I think, more powerful than it's been in a long time, maybe even going back all the way to George Wallace, because she's taking advantage of the legislature not being able to meet and being out of the game. There's a power vacuum there, and so all of a sudden now you see a bunch of things going on behind the scenes. I'm hearing more and more about gambling. The lottery / compact with the Porch Creeks is being negotiated now. We're also, as I said, we're going to sign this big prison deal. You go down the list here, that maybe even our aforementioned Medicaid expansion could happen with her and without the legislature around. It's kind of a fascinating thing to watch.
I think it is. You know, and Kay Ivey is smart. She's smart. She's been in politics her whole life. And she is surrounded with some pretty smart politicians in her administration. So she knows how to move through things. And she knows who's in the Senate, and she knows who runs it, and she knows the same thing about the House. And she can get things done that she wants. I think she stumbled badly on that toll bridge down there in Mobile. I think that was a huge, huge mistake on her part, poorly thought out. She hasn't stumbled yet. The prison deal is suspect. We hate to see that, but we know we have to do something.
They were dealing with the silly prison issue back when you were in the legislature. You know?
Absolutely.
So the members now are just like, well, we're not going to get it done. Governor Ivey will take it off our plate. Just let her do it. I mean, you hear that from Cam Ward's one of them. Some of these guys that have been there a while, just they shrugged it off and they said, well, just Governor Ivey, just take it from us. We can't do it. We're not brave enough to take those votes. And I mean, that's kind of where we are with it. And she's doing it. She's taking the ball and running. The problem, I think, is this is a real problem. And they're not really eager to talk about this. They have announced where these locations are going to be. They're kind of, sort of near where existing prisons are, but not really. So they're far enough away to where there are people locally that are like, I don't want this in my backyard. I don't want this here. Right. So that's the opposition. Well, what happens if they're successful in blocking these prisons and the whole K-Ivy prison plan falls apart? Then all of a sudden you got the Department of Justice that's going to step in and say, hey, you can't get it done. We're going to do it for you, and we're back to some kind of receivership. It's going to be very, very expensive for the state of Alabama.
Oh, listen, you know, that happened down at Limestone Correctional Facility. That is where we put all the AIDS patients before we had the cocktail to suppress the AIDS virus. And these people were out there by several hundred. And they weren't getting proper care, et cetera. The complaints were filed. The feds came in, and like you say, incredibly expensive. So, you know, we don't want that. But why would you put a prison in? Why not build the prisons where the prisons are now?
Well, so that's the problem. She wants to do this public-private partnership thing, and you can't have a public company or a private company come in and build on public land. It's just not allowed by state law. So the hiccup here at going it alone and not getting money through the legislature is you go to these private companies, and you're able to do it within the constraints of the current budget, but you can't build on public land. You got to build on private land. There just isn't of these big tracts of private land to build these prisons. So they're having to do it kind of maybe 10, 15, 20 miles away from existing facilities. And this is just, that's the conundrum there with this whole proposal.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
So that remains to be the issue, I think. They're going to have to confront that somehow, but the legislature just totally is. they're just like, go right ahead, give it your best shot, it seems.
Well, that brings me to Del Marsh, who's the leader now. Del says he's not running again.
So Del will step aside and we'll wrap it up on this. But it looks like Greg Reed, the current majority leader, is going to be the next pro tem, and then Clay Schofield of Gunnersville is going to take that majority leader role.
Yeah.
We got to get out of here. We're out of time. Congressman Griffin, thank you for sitting in for the 2 hours. We'll do it all again tomorrow, Midday Mobile. This has been Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan.